Good morning.
What have we?
We have contacts.
Dig it. Hello, Trilobite.
Hello, Anum.
I've enjoyed our interview, and I hope to have another.
It's been nice. Well,
soon.
I'll see you next time. I love our little chats.
Really, must do it more often.
Thank you very much for joining me here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the invite. It's my pleasure.
So, first of all, I hope everything's all right over there.
Things are... it could be worse. There are worse things than having conversation on a Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, got yourself some coffee or...
I have coffee. I have coffee. I have chair. I have relative quiet.
What else does a man need in his life?
Well, books have been written about that, so...
Yes, or...
I won't.
I've heard of these things.
Yeah.
I was going to pick up one of them, the Paginator 2000, I think.
All right. Printed matter. Yeah.
With the patented leaf over leaf system.
What was it Egon said? Print is dead. Was it Egon that said print is dead?
Well, Nietzsche said...
Ghostbusters?
Nietzsche said God is dead. And I'm not sure about print. They keep saying it hasn't happened yet.
I don't anticipate it happening anytime soon.
No. Though I am fairly excited about e-paper. I heard about the technology some time ago, and it's finally out now. A couple of the electronic readers have them.
It's only a matter of hours, I think, until we get the kind of e-paper that what's-his-name holds up in Firefly.
Yep.
What the hell? Now I can't remember the character's name. That's shameful. There's only 13 episodes, and I've seen them 3 times each.
You know what? Me too. But I scarcely remember most of
it. The Cockney guy with the bowler hat.
Okay, right.
First episode, he holds it up, and it's just this, it's like this, hell, one great big animated GIF on a magazine page.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quick, it's fast, and it's impressive as hell.
I know video film has been developed, like very thin, little bendable screens, but I think right now they're prohibitively expensive, and there's a couple other problems with them. I read something about it, so don't quote me on it, because I don't remember my source or anything.
It's all a matter of time.
Yes, it is. But I kind of like being able to carry my whole library in one device. I think that's kind of nice.
It's a good way to look at it. I mean, you do feel... somewhat well-equipped as far as having a bulk of material, but at the same time, it's like that scene from Futurama on the... they look in the window of the Martian Library, or the shot is in at the window of the Martian Library. I forget what the exact quote is, but it looks like the acquired knowledge of the universe, disc one, disc two.
That's it.
And it's kind of like, okay, you consider... If they burned down the library at Alexandria for whatever reason, they got rid of a whole bunch of stuff. But you snap that disc and you snap the other disc, consider how much you're destroying then.
Yep.
Without any hoopla or fire or anything.
Yeah, I'm reading a book right now called Footfall by Jerry Pournelle. I think I have to check. I don't remember if it's Niven and Pournelle or just Niven. I don't know. You ever read anything by those guys? It's Niven.
I think I began something like, I guess it was 20 years ago or 25 years ago, I started reading The Ring World.
Oh, yeah. I dig on those.
And I never got through them.
Why not?
I never got through them. I think I was too lazy. I think I was. It was one of those things where I was just like, yeah, I could, but I just don't feel like it now.
I was curious, because that one, it's a little hard to get into the characters, I think. And I'm not sure exactly why, so I wondered if maybe that was the case. But in this one, in Footfall, there are these granite blocks, something I'm going to steal, these meters-thick granite blocks that have been scattered all around this planet, and various lessons on physics and metallurgy and biology and what have you have been carved somehow all the way through these granite blocks with some sort of laser or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So they're coming across these things and finding them and trying to figure out, you know, who put them there and all this other stuff. That's a great method for long-term information store, I think.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And it's proof, more proof for me that there's no such thing as an original idea.
Nope. Never. I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm going to steal that for a game.
I stole it without even knowing it. That's like
really?
A piece of episode 12 of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.
Now, I've got to go back and listen to that because mainly I've been focused on gutter Skypes, and I've grabbed a few other things here and there. Some of your miscellany from anim5.com is just great. But I have not gone back and looked at International Detective Dragons.
It's an acquired taste. It was described, actually, very early on, it was described very accurately by Sam Chupp as a bran muffin.
Okay.
Tough to get through, but mm-hmm. in the long run, it's good for you.
You know what?
I love that.
That's a good description, and I think I might like this thing, and I'll have to go back and check it out. Sounds like up my alley.
Episode 12 is, essentially, it's a time capsule question, really. Mm-hmm. It's a solid granite block, 10 wide, 10 tall, 2 feet thick, and it's got to get sent hurtling out into space. The whole premise is that the only thing left, actually, or the only thing that is going to be left unless we do something different of the human race after the solar system implodes or the sun expands and swallows the earth, whatever, you know, there is a definite lifespan to this particular solar system. The only thing that's going to be left of us that's of any artistic merit, if you can call it that, is that plaque with the guy and the lady and the ship, the Pioneer plaque.
Yeah, and I think there's one on Voyager, isn't there?
Yeah, there's
records. Have a record?
Some record albums, and it's all that's it. That's all that's going to be left. So, the question was if you could put a granite block up out into space, and it had 12 compartments in it, what would you put in the compartments?
Nice.
And what would you carve on the outside? One side would be very reflective and shiny, so that it would catch attention, and the other side would have some kind of a message carved into the side of it.
Oh, that's great.
It's an interesting intellectual exercise.
Yes.
It's a psychological question. What do you think should be remembered?
Well, this sounds like a fantastic show, the kinds of discussions that I really enjoy having.
Yeah, I really should have learned early on that it's okay to, it's great to get listener feedback. As a matter of fact, the show wouldn't have existed as long as it did without the listener feedback. But it really should have been a kind of a round table type thing. There should have been other voices involved besides mine.
Well, did you enjoy doing it?
I did have fun. Yeah, I went for something like the number. The official number is something like 88, but it probably exceeds that. Probably about 100, a little over 100 shows when I count in the little specials and sideshows and interviews and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I reached the end of it, I reached the end of it, and that was about it. I really didn't conclude it, which is kind of cheesy, but
well,
I don't know.
I may have to disagree with you. I think it's a personal project you created, and sharing with people, you enjoyed doing it. People enjoyed listening to it, and that's all that needs to be said about it.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you have to bring it to a thrilling conclusion or anything like that. I think people probably appreciate it just as it is.
Well, if I do a final episode, it's going to have to include the reason why the show was called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, because that was a running gag throughout the thing.
That is the unanswered question, which I sometimes see referred to. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to ask you because I like unanswered questions.
Cool.
I'm a big fan of those.
Very cool.
So actually, that'd be a good thing to start with. Was International Detective Dragons your first experience with podcasting, with producing podcasting, I mean? And how'd you get into it?
Well, the act of putting up a podcast itself, yes, the IDDFOS was the first. So far as experience with podcasting goes, it starts like everybody else's, is finding them, realizing that they exist, and listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, hearing other people's work and getting enthusiastic about it and liking it and deciding that you'd like to try it yourself. And one of the most, I don't know, I guess you could call it an organic outcome, a cause and effect type of
mm-hmm.
thing
mm-hmm.
that happens with the whole podcasting thing is your audience is there already.
Yeah.
It's a question of, it's one of those things where radio stations and television stations and all the rest of these people have been trying to find this perfect common denominator where they could reach as many people as possible with as wide an area of interest and find the most popular thing and all the rest of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, if they were to put up a radio show that was actual play gaming or a radio show that just discussed RPGs or crocheting or how to trick out your Harley or mm-hmm. any of the rest of this stuff, the libertarian stuff, any of the stuff that if they've got too niche, if they got too specific, they weren't reaching the numbers that they wanted to reach in order to sell what they wanted to sell, which obviously is advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole podcasting thing was, you could do a particular podcast about whatever the particular interest is.
Yeah.
And your audience is there already because they're going to search for and find that interest.
Yeah, they're there.
And
they're
start
waiting.
Listening. They're there. They're waiting, yeah.
And it's so easy to find what you're interested in these days that essentially it's nothing to... and get an audience.
I think you got broken up there a little bit.
No problem. I was saying it's just so easy for people to find what they're looking for now.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, sure. And by the same token, though, it's amazing. It's actually really amazing how many people don't know that there are podcasts, that they don't exist. That they exist. I mean, even people... It seems that those that know of the existence of podcasts and podcasting
mm-hmm.
And are listening to it are already, you know, they're already in on it, they already know. But those that have heard of it think that you need an iPod.
Okay.
And have no interest in getting an iPad, or they're only interested
that.
In music or that kind of thing. And they don't really have a clear idea of what the whole thing is about. And the rest of the folks just... don't even, it's not even on their radar. They don't even know it exists.
Why do you think that is?
That's probably a combination of things. It's a combination of things. I always assume that there are far more people that are regularly using a computer and interested in computers in general than
mm-hmm.
there actually are. I'm finding that particularly in recent work experience, I'm finding that there's a whole bunch. Like a whole bunch of people that just never got into it. I mean,
really,
not even the elderly that get into it are getting into it to get emails from their kids and send pictures, and don't much take it much further than that. And the media, I guess the folks in the 30 to 40 range, those that aren't technically interested in much else other than getting home from work, turning on the TV and relaxing a little bit after they've done all the rest of the stuff that they need to do to, you know, to keep their lives in order.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like work to them. And it's the reason why they always go to their kids to get something fixed on their machines.
That's an interesting point of view. You know, we're sort of inside this community, I certainly am, of people who are computer savvy and who are interested in all this. And, you know, at least intellectually, I understand that there are people out there, but sometimes you'll come across a statistic from the Census Bureau or, you know, something like that. It's surprising to me the number of households, the number of people that don't have regular interaction with the internet, even today.
And those that do, and we're talking about developed countries where the infrastructure is there for it, but those that do, they aren't necessarily making any particular use of them. They're just in the house because the neighbor's kids have one, and it's all about school and the grades and keeping your kid equipped to learn in this century. Mm-hmm. And that's the only reason that it's in the house. The kid knows that it's there because, you know, they wouldn't be able to play Call of Duty without it. But the parents, so far as the parents are concerned, it's for your studies.
You know, I wonder how many parents really believe that, because we like to think it, but the parents at every generation have been around the block. They know the tricks because they used to pull them themselves.
That's
so
right.
I gotta wonder how many parents really believe that kind of thing.
I don't know.
You talked about early podcasts, or, you know, you found some podcasts that got you interested and got you listening. What were some of those, and what can you tell us about them?
Oh, the inspirational ones, the ones that really, that I listened to regularly were House of the Harping Monkey, Dragon's Landing Inn, or Dragon's Landing, and Gamer the Podcasting. And they were the I think House of the Harping Monkey and the whole round table thing that he did also, and Misfit Brew for a while too, he put out. I mean, it was a kind of a techno nostalgia rerun of what was going on. I guess it was one of those midlife crisis things, you know. I was about 44, 45.
Okay.
Probably 45, because I didn't start IDDFOS until I was 46, and that was 2006. It was probably one of those midlife crisis things where I'm going through, it's like, and I'm trying to, like, recapture my youth or some crap like that, some silly crap like that.
I'm only laughing in sympathy.
That's fine, because you know what it's, you know, you know. And I found out, I can't actually recall how specifically I found out about podcasting. I do not remember that, oddly enough. But when I found that you could, you know, search for stuff that was in your interest area, it was an interesting thing, because the last time I remember hanging out with folks that were really of my mindset, that were really, we've heard the term a lot, like-minded people, was college and high school, because of course we'd gravitate together with the folks at whatever. And at the time, in the late 70s, for high school, I'm class of 78, and at the time, for the nerd crowd or the geek crowd, the hot things that were going on in 1977-78 were Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, Lord of the Rings, Dungeons and Dragons. And then I started looking for podcasts, and all over the place, this is what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's 1996. It's 2006. I do that a lot.
2006, whatever.
You know, a decade here or there, it doesn't matter.
What's it matter?
What's it matter, really? But it was all going on again. It all came full circle. And I'm realizing, you know, part of me is saying, well, of course it's popular now. It's everybody in the same boat that you're in, fondly remembering these things and trying to bring them back and doing it successfully because they are the market, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't make it any less fun. So I started listening to these shows, and I started to, and also, of course, I remembered being involved in RPGs, even just a little bit, mm-hmm. when I was in high school and early college, and then kind of fell away from it.
Well, I want to return to something you said just a moment ago. You talked about the reason for the... looks like we've got some Skype magic going on. Are you receiving me?
I am.
Okay, very good. So, you mentioned that it may be popular now because the people who are making it popular are themselves reminiscing or going through nostalgia. Do you think we're in fact seeing a resurgence of interest in RPGs, and do you think that's the reason?
I couldn't accurately answer that, because I'm not as savvy of what's going on with role-playing games as somebody like, say, Mark Kinney is, or even folks that, whether they're podcasting or not, have kept themselves involved in it and watched the industry,
mm-hmm.
or watched the interest for whatever indicators they're using, whether it's forum posts or blogs or bulletin boards back when things first started getting hot with computers.
Yes, indeed.
I'd like to coin a phrase. I'm
Please do.
Trying to coin a phrase called grog noob.
I like and that a lot.
I've used this before in a conversation with Thunderstep.
Mm-hmm.
The term grog noob, and folks that are familiar with RPGs would know the term grognard.
Yes.
Which I think I had to look it up when I was talking to Thunderstep, and it meant one of the grumbling infantrymen in Napoleon's army.
Ah, that's
an
the
old
origin.
Yeah, an old soldier, an old grumbling infantryman, and it's been applied. Grognard has been applied to gamers that have been with the hobby and into the hobby and playing it since the late 60s,
mm-hmm.
the war gamers,
yep.
Yeah, who just have been around the block, know all the tricks, done the tabletop forever and ever and ever and ever, and just, you know, that's a Grognard. You see the guy walking in with the biker vest and the big beard, and he's got
yep.
patches from gaming conventions from decades ago or whatever. That's a Grognard. Well, yeah, I was around and playing. I think the first tabletop I got was, I think it might have been Panzerblitz by Avalon Hill.
Nice, I remember Avalon Hill, quite fun.
And this is, we're talking. I was in, I think, seventh or eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have the intellectual capacity to do that game, or if I did, I wasn't applying it. It was just a question of, ooh, cool, a war game thing, and I wanted to pick it up, and so I picked it up, and it never went anywhere. I didn't do anything with it,
mm-hmm.
but I was around for the stuff, and it was developing, you know, in that era, and I got involved a little bit in the late 70s and played a couple of games with some friends in high school, and dabbled a little bit here and there, more out of interest in being in the same gaming group as a couple of very interesting young women that I was interested in at the time. But I didn't stay into it and didn't stick with the RPGs because I went into professional theater,
mm-hmm.
and role-playing was not like top of my list of things I needed to do in order to chill out, you know?
Yep.
So 25 years go by, and here we are. I consider myself new to the hobby. I am, really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those people that hasn't been doing it for the past 30 years. I'm one of those guys that didn't stay with it, let it go away, and now suddenly remembering, oh, I used to have fun and I used to enjoy the people that I was dealing with when I was playing. And so grog noob pretty much applies.
I think that's a perfect description of it.
I think a lot of people have found themselves in my position too, because if there's a resurgence of interest, mm-hmm. it is a kind of a nostalgia thing, and it is a rediscovery of something that has always been valuable and always stood the test of time and always been worthy of people's attention, particularly people that are fed up with television or just never had the wide general interest that the networks and print media and whoever else is going for have been aiming at.
You know, my problem with television is every time they put on something that I like, it gets canceled.
There's an indicator of who's in charge.
Well, it's like, become predictable, really. And, you know, I find something, I'm like, oh, this is good. It's probably already canceled.
Yeah. They'll do a season of something that has a hell of a lot of potential and, you know, might be worthwhile. And, no, it's if too many people have to think hard,
mm-hmm.
or the jokes are just over too many people's heads, then it's like that's not going to sell the hairspray and the chainsaws,
yep.
or pickup trucks or whatever the hell. Or, you know.
You can combine all three, and then you've got a pickup mm-hmm. truck with a chainsaw on it and a hairspray flamethrower.
That's right, or at a tamer version where you just press something on the dash and it sprays your hair.
There you go.
So that you'll look good while you're plowing through the zombies.
So, do you have any particularly memorable games or gamers from the past, from this time you were talking about when you were starting to get into it before your hiatus?
I'm remembering somebody that I was in school with. It wasn't a specific game, but it was a personality type.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always going on about character abilities and giant epic things that some of the heroes in his games were able to do. And he was into science fiction, and he was into fantasy, and he joined the Navy.
Mm-hmm. That's a pattern I'm familiar with, too.
Well, he was in the Navy for a while, and he said, Portugal, Ceylon or something, exotic shops, but you're not going into Ceylon. You've got boiler watch. You can spend the next 18 hours watching the dials on this boiler in the whatever. And it was getting to a point where, in order to progress in the Navy, he was either going to have to decide that he wanted to ace these trigonometry or calculus or whatever advanced mechanics or engineering courses or something, mm-hmm. or read the latest three or four Andre Norton paperbacks that he had picked up. And he thought, you know what? I'd rather read the Andre Norton paperbacks I picked up. And he quit.
There you go. Good man.
And it's like, you know what? Make your decision and stick by it. And there he did it. It's kind of like, you know.
That takes
I don't know why that's so memorable. It's kind of like, yeah. I guess what made it memorable was it's like, decide who you know, realize who you are and what you want, and don't play games with it. You know, don't look back and say, you know, I really wish I'd pursued the things that I was actually interested in instead
yes.
of, you know, following some kind of a greased track. But you know,
and I think that I may be part of it's because he's a person who did that. And a lot of us have to keep reminding ourselves that may be a better way to live life, is to try to pay attention to your actual desires and try to go for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to agree with that.
I don't remember who it was that said, better your own duty, though imperfect, than another duty's flawlessly performed.
Mm.
That's something that's always kind of stuck with me, too.
That's pretty cool.
So, after doing some of this, you got away from gaming because you got into the theater, and sounds like there wasn't a whole lot of overlap there, which surprises me, between gamers and theater people. But also, you just got a bit swept up in it and everything. What about your history in the theater? What got you into that, and where did it go?
Oh, originally, I think... theatrical inclinations probably start in grade school, really.
Cool.
For a lot of people. Except, you know what's fascinating is a lot of the most successful performers, actors, and most famous personalities in the history of entertainment have started very late. You know, it's you read about all these bios of these famous people, and you find out that they didn't actually get into film, television, movies, the theater, or whatever until they were like in their mid-20s or something, or until they had just come back from a long series of other jobs or serving in the armed services.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that, of course, has to do with the time period that most of these famous people were in. But at least for me, I don't know how it is for most of the other people in theater. I was interested in grade school because I was always acting up. I was always being a big ham. And then in high school, the sports never appealed to me. Most of the other extracurricular stuff never appealed to me. It was always, whatever. Do what you're best at and enjoy most. And that's another one of those things where, you know, it looks great on paper. Looks great on paper. There's a lot of books out there. Of course, they're written by the successful people, but there are books out there saying, "Do what you love the most; the money will follow."
Yes.
Not so much.
Not necessarily.
Not so much. It's great. It's nice. I'm so glad it happened for you and that you can write a book about it. But reality intrudes. But it started with grade school, got heavily into it in high school, decided I was another one of those decision things. I was actually in line at Rutgers, in line for registration at Rutgers in Newark.
Right on.
At the end of 78, summer of 78, thinking to myself, do I really want to do this? And the answer was no. And so I left. I left. And a year went by, pretty much deciding, are you going to do this or are you not? You know, what's going on? And I thought, well, what can I do to put off actually starting my life? I know. I'll go to college for 4 years. That way I won't have to worry about actually beginning my life or doing anything. I can put that off. I managed to stretch that 4 years into six. It was great. It's absolutely great. And of course, I went for theater major, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After the axe fell and I actually, you know, graduation broke out. The cold shock of graduation. And I was lucky enough to get into Actors Equity by way of a children's theater.
Mm-hmm.
In Verona, New Jersey.
So what is Actors Equity?
Oh, Actors Equity Association is the Actors Union, the Stage Performers Union.
Okay.
In California, you've got SAG and AFTRA, I think it is, American Federation of Television and Radio Actors.
I've heard of SAG, but that's about it.
Yes, Screen Actors Guild. Actors Equity is the stage version of those two. For if you're going to perform in a theater, on stage, in a musical or a show or a straight play or anything like that, if you're a part of that union, then you're an equity actor. The problem with equity actors is well, not the actors themselves, a problem with being in equity.
I don't know. Have you ever seen one eat?
Really? Actors are people too! Yeah. The problem is it keeps you out. It legally, or as you'd be violating your union contract, you would be violating your union membership if you performed in a non-equity show mm-hmm. without, you know, some kind of a letter of agreement. There's all kinds of ways for producers to get equity actors into their show without having to pay equity scale.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, it keeps you out of more shows than it actually gets you into. And then at the time I was going for the professional acting thing, it was you can't get into equity unless you performed in an equity show, and you can't perform in an equity show unless you're a member of equity. Yeah, it's the old catch-22 that for some reason it was another one of those who do you know kind of things.
You gotta have the connections.
In this case though, it was one of those situations where it was a children's theater that had gone as professional as they could go, and that included making sure that they were equity actors. The thing about a touring children's company is if they're doing local schools and they're doing local, I mean, the New York metropolitan area, they have an out. They have to hire somebody within a certain mile radius of where they're based.
Okay.
You know, they can't just hold open auditions because they have very, very specific requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you're going to be at a school setting up at 8 o'clock, you've got to pick up your performers at 6:30 or 7, or they have to drive to the space to get into the van, you know.
Right.
It doesn't work out to hire just anybody out of New York because you can't function that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they were still an equity company, but they were, you know, they got to hire who they wanted to hire.
And is that how you
they
got
were
in?
Local. That's basically, well, you do have to audition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I had sucked eggs, they would have said, thank you very much, we'll let you know.
But, that's what gave you the opportunity is what I was trying
that's
to say.
Essentially, yeah, that's what gave me the opportunity. And
wow.
And while I was a part of that company, I did I ran audio for some showcases in New York, and, mm-hmm. and then did a showcase myself. I couldn't find any scenes that I really liked out of any of the current shows that were running,
mm-hmm.
so I wrote a piece of a play that never existed. I used to do that a lot.
That's great.
I wrote a scene for myself and one of the other an actress that was also a part of the company because we wanted to do a showcase in New York, get our faces seen, and but it didn't go a lot further than that because at the end of the I think I was with that company for about 3 years, and it's pretty grueling, actually.
I can imagine so, because you're moving all the time. And
constantly.
From what little I know of theater, it's an intense little world. I mean, anytime you get people in any kind of restricted environment, it turns into a pressure cooker.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with, most of it actually has to do with how time sensitive it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because something's going to happen on the stage, and it had better. Something's going to happen at this time.
Yes.
Whether it's good or not depends on how prepared everybody is and how well everybody did their job, from setting up the lights and testing the mics and pre-setting all the props and making sure all your ducks are in a row before the lights go down.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that happens or not, it depends on the company, but it's going to happen. You know,
it's like there's something
the old phrase. The old phrase: the show must go on.
Yep.
Well, yeah, it's going to go on. It doesn't depend on any one individual in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I went on with an eye patch, for crying out loud.
Was this after the pigeon incident? No, that was another actor who got hit with that.
Ah, yeah, that was a couple of years later. Pigeon incident. Is this the
there were
that's right.
Some
I was up
drunk.
in the Right. Yeah, that was a tech thing from many years later. No, this was a staple. This was a staple gun accident.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
It was one of those total accident things. But a staple, we were stapling fabric onto something. Somebody else had picked up the staple gun, squeezed the trigger a little too hard, and a staple bounced off my cornea. And it wasn't all that painful. It wasn't all that painful at the time. It was a small staple. It was not a big deal, but it did take a butterfly-shaped chunk out of my cornea. It was one of those things where you feel like your eye is tearing. Whatever. It was minor, and it's one of those things that repairs itself over a couple of days because fortunately the eye is like that for minor injuries. But I had to wear a cup over my eye, the classic thing you used to see on all the kids in grade school. Of course, they don't let you back into school if you got pink eye anymore, but it used to be you'd have to wear one of those cups and everybody would make fun of you. But I had to, I had to get in costume and go on stage and do the show like that. Because it was, there weren't any understudies. It was just us. And we'd have to go from someplace in mid-central Jersey in the morning and then do a show in mid-Long Island in the afternoon. So you'd do a show, break everything down, get in the van, book ass to mid-Long Island, and then set up again to do the same show, in another school entirely.
Man. Well,
three years of that was wearing, yeah.
I was going to say, that has got to just wear you down, especially if it's just everything is time crucial all the time.
Yeah. And there is no such thing as calling out. There's absolutely no such thing as calling out. And I'm not a morning person. I never in my life have been a morning person. And this was a job that required some time. Because I was on tech crew, I wasn't... There were members of the company that had specific roles, of course, and some of them were just strictly, they are performers, they are actors.
Mm-hmm.
And while they do assist in setting up the stage stuff and putting props in place, the bulk of the equipment that makes the Broadway feel of the thing possible, because... Mm-hmm. I mean, there are different levels of children's theater, obviously. Some just, get all the kids together in the gym and sit them in a circle and we'll do our thing on mats and whatever, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are companies like the one that I was involved in that had lighting, portable lighting trees that were set up on either side, and a full sound system.
Wow.
PZM floor mics. I mean, the whole nine yards. Sometimes
fog.
Yeah, yeah. And I was on. I was the also aside from being in the shows, I was their technical director for a good long while. So I was part of the people that had to get there first.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant sometimes getting up at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning every morning for a week.
Man.
And I'm just not a morning person, so.
No.
And then smiling and singing.
I'm laughing and dancing and jumping and singing.
That's right.
Man, that's tough. So,
yeah.
What got you into the props area and into organizing the inventories and all this? What got you into that, and how much did that have to do with Paper Mill Synod? Scenics.
The Paper Mill Playhouse has been around. I think they opened the Paper Mill Playhouse itself in Millburn, New Jersey, opened about 3 years after the completion of the Adirondack Trail. I looked that up. I was interested in finding because it was coming close to shutting down like forever, about 3 years ago. And we were all, pretty much warming up our resumes and wondering what the hell we were going to do.
Yeah.
They were hiring technicians. They were hiring carpenters. When I left the Children's Theater Company and like began my recuperation from that particular grind, I went on to one of the local regional theaters. It's speaking of theaters and producers that have equity letters of agreement.
Mm-hmm.
They would put on professional shows with local actors, but would get in ringer talent. They would get in ringers, equity actors or whatever, to try and, I mean, essentially improve the quality of their shows.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, so they weren't just something that was a step up from going to a high school musical or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were charging for tickets, and you can't, you know, you got to put out something good. I had auditioned for and been in a couple of their shows while with the Children's Theater Company. This is proof of how nuts you can be when you're in your 20s. This is proof of how insane you can be when you're in your 20s. Being in shows at night while you're doing shows during the day.
Yeah.
But I got into a couple of those, and I got to know the producer and the director and the folks that were involved over there pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always been technically inclined, because while I did enjoy doing the singing and dancing and mostly the performing, and I sang and I danced on stage. Mm-hmm. I am not a singer or a dancer. I'll state that right now.
But I play one on the stage.
But I play one on the stage. No, I was always straight play. I always was more interested in straight play,
mm-hmm.
performance, that kind of thing. But yeah, they put on musicals, so I, you know, auditioned, got into a couple of those, and they were, when I left the Children's Theater Company, it was mainly because they needed a technical director.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a TD to help get their shows up, built, run, and covered so far as lighting and sound and carpentry and the rest of that stuff. And I thought, you know, this would be a nice change. And, you know, it's one place to go to. I wouldn't have to get up at 5 o'clock every morning. And so I thanked Children's Theater very much and jumped ship and went off to be the technical director at this local regional theater.
How'd that work out for you?
It was okay until, I think it was 1991, when mm-hmm. I had almost a complete breakdown.
Oh, what happened?
It was, the show, I believe, was Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
And I had poured so much of my time, energy, and attention into this place.
Mm-hmm.
That it had become a literal succubi. The building itself had become a succubi, and was all I had to do was drive by it, and I'd get tired.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I had to cough.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah, the show was Carnival, and so much had been going wrong during the production of this thing. And this is like pre-show, before the show even opened.
Mm-hmm.
And I had come away from a history with this place of having one... They were successful shows, but their audience just wasn't that into quality or art.
Really?
No, they wanted songs and dance and fluff and they wanted fluff. They didn't really want anything that was of any particular substance. And part of what drew me to this place was the director was interested in putting on stuff that was a cut above, you know, stuff that mm-hmm. people think.
Stuff and that's that, what you wanted to do.
And that's what I wanted to do. It was like, I didn't think I was going to be able to do anything like this after college. But mm-hmm. the only place where you could find shows like this was in a college setting, because they could afford not to make any ticket sales. But this, hell, we did Sunday in the Park with George. Nobody does Sunday in the Park with George. It's a killer show. It is an, I don't know, are you familiar with it?
I'm not, which shows that, in fact, it doesn't get done. I think I've heard the name, and that's about it.
Yeah, if you're familiar with, you're familiar with Princess Bride.
Okay.
Okay. Inigo Montoya?
Yes.
Mandy Patinkin?
Don't remember the names so much.
Yeah.
But.
Mandy Patinkin plays Inigo Montoya.
Okay, gotcha.
You killed my father, prepared to die, you know. In his youth, I guess, I don't know, 20 years before, prior to that, or 15 years prior to that, in his early career, he played Georges Seurat, the painter.
Okay.
The expressionist, or is it impressionist? I forget which. He invented pointillism, or pioneered pointillism.
Then I probably like a lot of his paintings.
Yeah, you may have seen one. One is called Sunday in the.
Yes.
Georges Seurat painted the dot on the island of La Grande Jatte.
Okay.
Is the name of the painting, and the musical was built. The musical itself was built around this painting and the artist Georges Seurat.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. So he was the tenor lead playing this character, and Bernadette Peters is the love interest. Hal Data was in it. Brent Spiner was in it.
Brent Spiner.
If you can find one of the vintage recordings, it's got to be on YouTube, probably in about 60 or 70 parts, but it's... but as a stage show, and this is one of those, it was a killer thing to produce. It took absolutely everything out of everybody to put this show on. I mean, the hours, the time, the attention to detail, and I, like an idiot, because just as a technical thing, the thing is a monster to produce. You have to make a painting on stage. That moves, and there's and that's just the first half of the show. The second half of the show has other special effects, like pop-ups coming up out of the stage, and standee cutouts that have to be brought on and all. Production-wise, it was probably one of the most expensive things they ever did.
Oh, but what a challenge! I mean, how can you resist taking something like that on?
And anybody that's in the arts, and if you're in the theater, you're in all of the arts. It is in love with the show because it's like a theatrical love letter to theater, without actually being one.
Yep.
And like an idiot, I was in it. I auditioned to be in it as well. It's kind of like, you know, not enough punishment.
But coming out it on the other side, you would have been able to say that you did all of that. So I can understand the impulse. So with Carnival, it sounds like you just poured your heart and soul into this, and there were so many problems, and plus, the audience didn't like it, or just couldn't appreciate it, or what?
I think by the time Carnival rolled around, I had already realized what the audience actually wanted, because the show we did immediately after Sunday in the Park with George, which actually turned out very, very well. We gave ourselves a break and did a very light musical with four characters and a very, very simple set, almost minimal lighting. And it was a lighthearted, cute little fantasy musical thing that was over in a minute. And I was in the lobby during that, or after one of the shows, and I heard a couple come out that was a kind of a pretty close demographic of what they had for their audience. And I heard the guy say to his wife, "Well, they owed us this one. That's that last piece of crap they did."
Really? Man.
You talk about an epiphany? Wow. It's like, oh, I understand. That's great. Thanks so much. Yeah. Yeah, a couple of shows go by, and we get Carnival, and we have an opening night where it just almost nothing went right, and the designers were having a lover's spat in the dressing rooms, and the producer was all pissed off. And I was in the back of the theater having a breakdown. I was just like doing a slow meltdown. This is 1991, which I think was a lousy year for a hell of a lot of people. And I wanted to jump ship there because it looked to me like, you know, nothing was ever going to come of this. And I needed to find work while I was taking programming classes.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the good things that happened while I was at the Forum Theater was one of the fellows that I worked with was into computers a little bit.
Right on.
And talked to me about this new PC coming out, this new super graphics PC that could do all kinds of incredible things called the Amiga.
Yes. That's great.
Yeah.
Just a brief aside, there are some graphics professionals who still use the Amigas today. There's a whole community that's sprung up around that.
Oh, yeah. Because it's been kept alive.
People are still impressed.
It's been kept alive. It's been kept alive in Europe, primarily, I think.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, and it was built for... It was one of the finest pieces of equipment ever mismanaged by idiots in the top... in the top echelons of Commodore or whatever that ever existed. And it could have been in Star Trek, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was... They called them first. They called Commodore first before they called... Was it a Mac that was in...
Yes, it was.
Yeah, the search for... No, wait a minute. The Voyage Home.
Voyage Home.
Computer, everybody's favorite line.
Yes.
Computer.
Oh, how quaint.
Exactly, yeah. That they called Commodore first.
Wow.
And wondered if they would... And whoever it was that answered... whoever was in PR, whoever was making the decisions was an absolute bonehead. A total absolute bonehead. Because they couldn't get anybody, they couldn't get anybody to tell them, you know, can we get, we'd like to use this, can we get, first they wanted to buy one.
Okay.
Then they'd have to wait a certain number of weeks, and then they would, it was kind of like, they got the impression, and they were told by the PR person that Commodore is a this quarter type of company. Not this year, so it's like, whatever. They weren't smart enough to realize what it was that they were urinating on when they didn't immediately jump to this opportunity.
That's a shame.
But, yeah, they called Mac, and not only was there a Macintosh, the top of the line, kick ass super system on their set the next day. Macintosh sent a programmer to go along with it.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you want this thing to do? We will make it do it.
That's what I would have done if I'd been running a computer company at the time. A movie calls me up.
Yes.
I mean, Star Trek, for crying out loud, calls
you. Yeah, Paramount calls you, you know.
I'm putting mine in my car right now. It's my personal work computer, but I'm coming out and I will help you work out whatever you need to do.
Exactly.
And they didn't do it. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's that colors my interpretation of corporate think from top to bottom. Sadly,
I just have to say I don't think you're far off. I don't know if that's so much coloring as clarifying.
Kind of sad, but there it is. He introduced me to the computer and I started getting into it, and then I realized all these blueprints that I was showing directors of, this is where this wall ends and this is where your doorway is and your platforms are going to be so high. They're looking at these blueprints and they're nodding their head like they actually know what I'm saying. And
but
I know
they don't
know what I'm saying. And the thing gets built and they say, I didn't know I wasn't going to have this much room here. Or they say, how come this is so close to the... And I realize, you know, yeah, you showed it to them on the blueprint, but that means nothing.
If
I could just show them. So I started doing 3D modeling of the sets of the designs that I was doing, and I was transferring it to VHS tape because the Amiga could do that in a second. It was built for it. And giving the VHS tapes of 3D walkthroughs of the set that they were going to be working on before
that
even the lumber was ordered.
That must have blown people away.
Oh, yeah. They were very impressed with it. So was I. It was a lot of fun. It was one of those things that that makes both the left half and the right half of the brain really, really happy.
Yeah.
I was running some cable, I think, over the top of the stage of one of the sets that I had done that modeling for, and I looked down. It was the first time I had been up there after having the thing built, and I looked down and I thought, I've seen this before. And
that's amazing.
It was great.
Very, very cool. So we're close to the time that I want to wrap up, but I've had a fantastic time, and there's still a lot of stuff I'd like to ask you about. Would you be willing to come back another time, maybe some weeks, maybe a month or two in the future, and do a bit more?
An opportunity for me to talk more about myself? Let me think about it. Yeah, I'll do it.
Okay, question answered. But one thing I do want to talk about before we go is solid symbols, because I have sitting here on my desk a copy or an excellent replica of my namesake, and I have to tell you, it's a very good piece of work.
Thank you. Cool. That's excellent. Thank you for ordering one.
I like it quite a bit.
Solid Symbols was one of my, well, actually, I think it would be my recent attempt to get my own gig.
Mm-hmm.
And by recent, I mean since 2008. Yeah, when things tanked out at Paper Mill and they had their little meltdown and sold everything except the theater itself. Yeah, when I was shoved out of a job, it was one of those bitter experiences where you think, I want control over, you know, what my situation is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably something I should still be striving for, but
it's incredibly difficult.
It is extremely difficult and outrageously expensive, and almost we're almost in a political environment that, like, prohibits it.
Yes.
a political and economic environment that prohibits it. The first thing everybody tells you when you, no matter what the business is that you want to start, no matter all the labor or whatever that's going to come out of it comes from you, the first thing they tell you is, well, go to the bank.
Yep.
It's like, go to the bank. Make sure that somebody else has got their hand in your pocket before you start. Come on.
Yeah, but it's true. I know some people who run small businesses and a couple other people who have tried to, and you just get taxed out of existence, if nothing else.
You get taxed out of existence, and it's always, it's never just you, what you do, what you can provide, and who your customers are. It's always a periphery of leeches. You know, they put on the show of providing you with all this service, and essentially it's no, they don't. They're just
vultures and jackals.
Basically, yeah. But, you know, despite that, I mean, it didn't actually, Solid Symbols remains in existence and will continue to offer pieces, hopefully some new ones before the end of the summer. It's more of a thing that I'm doing actually because I enjoy doing it rather than something that needs, that is supposed to sustain me, because it was never going to do that.
Yeah.
It's one of those life experience things where you learn as you go.
Well, you don't, exactly. If you hadn't tried it, you'd be thinking about it the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah. Same as the performing, really.
Mm-hmm.
Same as the performing. I can't recommend it to anybody, but if you're gonna go for it and then move on. But don't always wish you had gone for it.
Mm-hmm. No one wants to be that guy.
Nope. Speaking of going for it, this has been all me all this time.
Exactly. That's the point.
Well, maybe, but, you know, how about me asking you a question about Porcelain Llama Theater?
Well, you know, we're just about out of time.
Oh, but, funny thing that.
You hear the music, you know what that means. No, we really are, but... we really are, but please, go ahead, ask away. I'm happy to talk about it.
Is this your first podcasting experience? And how are you enjoying it thus far? I know it's very early in the gig, but how are you liking it?
It is. It's the first thing I've done of this type at all, and I am really enjoying it. After the first episode, found exactly what you meant when you talked about the investment of time that you have to make.
Oh, yeah.
So I've backed off my time investment, and I decided from the beginning that I was not going to try to create the world's best podcast or to do anything new or revolutionary, because I knew I wouldn't be able to maintain the commitment to do that. And I know that no matter what I did, someone else has done it better and earlier. So my idea going in was just to try to create something that I would enjoy doing and that hopefully other people would. And so far, I am really digging on it. I really enjoy it.
Bullseye. Bullseye. That's wisdom. Do what you like. Do what you enjoy. Do something that you know is not going to turn into... Because as you said, yeah, I mean, you can set all kinds of standards for yourself and mm-hmm. try and maintain them, but then it's not something that you're having fun doing. It's something that you're obligating yourself to do, and that's silly.
Yes, and I don't want it to be that, because I know when it becomes an obligation, I won't want to do it anymore.
Well, I do have to say, though, I wasn't kidding when I said you got a voice for podcasting. I know you've heard this before.
Well, thank you very much.
And it's surprising, as you probably, I mean, you've discovered yourself as you listen to other podcasts, it's really surprising how many folks out there really do have a great audio presentation mm-hmm. in not just the way they come across on the mic, but the way they interpret script, the way they just in general conversation. Yeah, these are some pleasant, fun, and talented voices to listen to, and it's kind of a shame that, you know, that the media itself is going the way of the dinosaur because of the fact that people can get so much for free, but mm-hmm. still it's a treat and it's a plus for us.
Yes, it
listeners.
Is. I'd say that it allows a lot of people to just put something out there, and yeah. we're seeing so much creativity and so many good things that people do just for the love of doing it.
Amazing.
It really is. It really is. And in a way, it kind of refreshes my faith in mankind to see people putting out, doing so much simply for the sheer love of creativity.
Yeah.
You know, that's astounding to me.
We win.
And I think that's a good point to wrap up. Thank you very much for coming on and talking with me.
Thank you. It's been my privilege. I had a blast.
Me
too. Want to do it again?
Yes, definitely. Let's talk about doing this again maybe sometime in a couple months. You know,
sure.
I've got gaming backlog to catch up on and going to be opening up a new campaign and doing a bunch of other stuff. But I'll write you. We'll set a tentative date if that works for you. And we'll keep up on it.
Good deal.
All right.
Excellent. All right.
And
Thank you again.
Thank you very much. And I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take it easy then.
You too.
Bye. Bye-bye.